this division that Jesus speaks about in the gospel is something, it's a necessary evil, if you will, because of the spirit of the world. And we see a good example of this spirit of the world in the first reading, where we're told that a king arose who knew not Joseph. And this king became hostile to God's people. And of course, the last sentence speaks about how the babies, the male babies, were killed. This king, there was a force, a pagan force that took over, that was hostile to God's people, that was hostile to life. When we think of, for instance, what's going on in our own day, we are also in a situation where we have a pagan force that is hostile to God's people and also hostile to life. Most of you, I'm sure, are aware of Steve Ray. If not, it's not important, but he told a story about his grandmother. The way things used to be when she was a young mother and wife and was raising her family. And she spoke of how in that time, abortion wasn't even talked about in public, in civil society. Homosexual unions weren't talked about in civil society. And she was lamenting about what took place in our culture. And he said that she was lamenting and said, "How could this have happened? How could this have happened? Homosexual marriage, a culture of death." We're in a time of acute spiritual combat. Spiritual battle, if you will. She asked the question, how did this come about? Well, we can give a brief history about how this come about. And we can also talk about the Conacher's response to how this come about, came about, I should say. But we can go all the way back to 1846, about 173 years ago. At that time, Pope Pius IX was the holy pontiff, and he condemned a nefarious ideology that was wreaking havoc already in his day in 1846, and he condemned it very strongly. People may have thought he was exaggerating, but he said that it would be something that would destroy culture. He said it would destroy society itself if this nefarious ideology would take hold and effect in man's hearts. He said that it was being spread throughout the world in 1846. At great cost. And when you think of that great cost, you think of implementing men and women to teach this nefarious ideology, to propagate it, to form people in it. At great cost, this was being done. And of course, that means that if it was being done at great cost, that means that there was great wealth behind it. Paupers don't have the means to do something like that. But men of great finance, of huge finance, have this ability and power. And they were doing it already again in 1846. And it was an atheistic ideology, opposed to God, opposed not more specifically than being opposed to God, but it was obviously also opposed to Christian morality. Its goal was to establish a super race, if you will. Men who were freed from the shackles of Christianity, Christian morality, who would be able to live in whatever way they saw fit, using their intellects and their wills to form whatever type of culture and society they wanted. This condemned ideology, Pope Pius IX called communism. The father of communism, as we have been taught, Karl Marx, wrote his Communist Manifesto in 1848, 2 years after it was condemned by Pope Pius IX in 1846. It was something that was already alive in the world. But the genius of Marx, of what Karl Marx gave to these men, was that he gave them a weapon, if you will, a concise plan that transformed their vague ideology into, again, this plan, this weapon that could be used to transform culture, to transform society in the way that they saw fit. This tool has been refined and used in different ways in different parts of the world. In some parts of the world, it took the form of a violent revolution. We can think of Russia, we can think of China, we can think of Vietnam, we can think of most of the Far Eastern countries, Cambodia and whatnot, North Korea. But for other parts of the world, it took the form of a cultural revolution, transforming ideas, transforming values. And this cultural revolution is the form that it took in this country, in the United States of America. For example, the Communist Party, USA, was responsible for three very harmful movements: feminism, the homosexual movement, and the anti-Christian movement. Feminism was an attack on motherhood. It was an attack on being a wife. And it was specifically designed to make women feel that they were being abused into being a wife and mother, that they weren't free to be able to take up the path that men were taking up. It made them ashamed to be a wife and mother. And of course, the woman who was responsible for this was never married. The whole point was that she was trying to liberate women from this horrible state that they were caught in. But she herself was never married. She was an ideologue. And she was, how do you call it, an instigator, if you will, for lack of a better term. But she made women feel as if they were victims of a patriarchal society. And then we can think of the homosexual movement that was set to redefine marriage, a very powerful tool in their arsenal that has, as I said, been refined over the course of the years. And they have won a great victory, as we are all very much aware of, in this area. And then the anti-Christian movement, First, prayer was forced out of the public schools. Then the Bible was forced out of the public schools. And then the commandments were forced out of the public schools. Crucifixes were forced out of the public schools. And this war was always waged against the family. Some of you may be aware of Sister Lucia of Fatima fame, who spoke that the final battle would be precisely that over the battle or over the family. I am not in any way, shape, or form proclaiming the end of the world. That's not my point. We have been in the end times for 2,000 years. But the war is against the family, and it makes sense that it would be. God, in his essential mystery, is a family, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The church, in its essential mystery, is a family. And then, of course, we have the domestic church, the family which makes up the church. Hence, you can see then the reason why Jerry and Gwen Conacher saw the need for a family apostolate to protect the family, to defend the family, a need for family consecration. The reason why this is important for us to know is because it's important for us to be aware that there is a real spiritual battle going on out there. It's not just a question of Satan tempting us from time to time to do misdeeds. But there is some real diabolical horrors that are going on out there, both within the church and in our culture and in our society. But that's not the final word. If we even look at Old Testament Joseph, of course we could call him Saint Joseph too, but if we look at Joseph of the Old Testament, there's a beautiful parallel between him and Christ. Of course, he was sold by his brother Judah, just as Jesus was sold by Judas, whose name is Judah, for a very small sum to a pagan power. And that pagan power, Joseph experienced a kind of death, if you will. But he was raised to glory to the right hand of Pharaoh. Jesus suffered a death and was raised to glory to the right hand of God. And Joseph saved the world through wheat. This is Jesus saves the world through wheat. A sacramental reality, a sacramental power. And this power has been given to us in the church. In Old Testament times, aside from Joseph, the Old Testament, we can look at the first Exodus. Going back to Joseph even. The act that brought them out of Egypt was a liturgical act. It was the Passover. And of course, that Passover was a corporate Torah sacrifice, a corporate Eucharistic sacrifice, because Tota, which is the Jewish word for Thanksgiving, is Eucharist. This was their corporate Eucharistic sacrifice that brought them out of slavery, a liturgical act. It was a liturgical act that brought down the walls of Jericho. God was showing his people the power of the liturgy. And this power of the liturgy was also, we could say, centered in certain individuals of the Old Testament. Perhaps the one who of greatest fame would be King David, who became a great warrior, who brought peace round about so that the temple could be built. This was what made him have a heart that was like unto God. He lived and breathed and died for the liturgy, for the temple. And because of that, he had great power. You could say he was Eucharisticized. He built a tabernacle before the temple was built, and the Levitical priest, 24 hours a day, offered the Toda Psalms, the Eucharistic Psalms they were singing. He transformed the liturgy into a Eucharistic liturgy. This was King David. Well, so we can see how the power of the liturgy goes from giving the whole people of God power to giving individual people great power. We can see how liturgy and life was united in the Old Testament. And Jesus made this so very manifestly clear in the New Testament when he united liturgy and life in the Holy Eucharist. He instituted the Holy Eucharist on Holy Thursday, sacrificing himself out of love for us. And then he lived that sacrifice, dying on the cross on Good Friday. And with this great power, transformed the world. Your family consecration to Jesus is a powerful means of your daily life being Eucharisticized by the power of the liturgy for the transformation of our culture. Your life is combined with the liturgy in a powerful way through your consecration to Jesus. And do an examination of conscience. How well are we living out this consecration to Jesus? It needs to be lived out. Are you living out the seven keys to a God-centered family living? Are you developing your life of prayer? It's not just about praying vocal prayers. It's about entering into intimate communion with God, which is a beautiful gift. Are we developing that? Are you living a sacramental life? Confession, the Holy Eucharist, receiving that sacramental power to transform first ourselves and then our culture. Are you learning the faith? Are you striving to grow in virtue? If you want to get out of bad habits, the best way to do it is by doing good. There's so many things out there that are so worthwhile doing. People have been brought out of depression by doing good works, by helping others. Are you striving to grow in virtue, serving others? Are you sharing the faith? When the opportunity arises, obviously, it's not something that can be done every day. But with regard to that, it's precisely by serving others that's going to give you that right to be able to share the faith with them. You go up to people nowadays and ask them about the faith, they'll tell you to go jump in a lake. But if you help them, spend time with them, build a relationship with them, they're going to naturally want to have what you have. And are you sanctifying your daily duties? Our Lady of Fatima said we need constant offerings of prayer and sacrifice. The only way we can make such a constant offering is by giving this intention to everything we do. in the best form of this habitual attention is a consecration. The consecration to the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the Immaculate Heart of Mary with Saint Joseph. It's all there in your spirituality. It's all there. Your consecration made and lived out through the seven keys of a God-centered life makes your lives Eucharisticized and very powerful, even to the point of being able to transform back our culture, transform back our country. Amen.